You've no doubt noticed that gas prices are creeping up again. If it was just a matter of supply and demand, that wouldn't be the case because there's a glut of oil on the market. Here's Marianne Russ of Capital Public Radio to explain why you're paying more at the pump.
It's one thing to grumble about paying more to fill up your car. It's another thing entirely when you have 150 big rigs to refuel every day. Scott Blevins heads up Mountain Valley Express Freight Service in Manteca, about an hour south of Sacramento. He has operations in California, Nevada, and Arizona.
Diesel fuel for our company is roughly our third single largest cost.
With both gas and diesel prices around $3 a gallon in California, Blevins spends about $330,000 a month on fuel. Higher prices hurt Blevins, but not in the way you might think. Like many in the industry, he passes the higher cost onto his customers through a fuel surcharge. That makes it more expensive for them to ship their goods, and that means...
Ultimately, we consumers pay for it. I mean, if you look at your grocery bill lately, a large part of the cost of your groceries is due to fuel. Because they all come on a truck.
Blevins says business is down because his customers are shipping 15 to 20% less than they did a couple of years ago. And that's largely because consumers are buying less stuff. So what's driving the cost of gas up?
Unfortunately, it's not supply and demand.
That's Bob Vandervalk, a fuel pricing analyst.
Because supply is up, demand is down, and prices should be going down, and they did not.
Vandervalk is a consultant with 4Refuel, a diesel fuel distributor in Washington state. He says the weak dollar has a lot to do with it.
If the dollar is weak, crude oil goes up because everybody takes their money out of investing it in the almighty dollar or the euro and putting it into investing it in paper barrels of crude oil.
Vandervalk says that investment has helped push oil to around $80 a barrel, and that means higher prices at the pump. He says they'll probably keep climbing, in California at least, which has the highest gas prices in the continental U.S., could be at $4 a gallon by the summer. Esmail Adibi doesn't think prices will get that high. He's an economist at Chapman University in the Los Angeles area. But he is concerned about the effect of higher gas prices on the economic recovery.
When gas prices go higher the way it did, $1 per gallon over 1 year, what it means is kind of a tax on us. It's like we have less disposable income to spend.
Adibi agrees the weak dollar is playing a role in high gas prices. But he says there are a number of contributing factors, including the cold snap in the eastern part of the country, that increase demand for energy. In California, where unemployment is over 12% and the state budget has a $20 billion hole in it, Adibi says the gas pump isn't an effective place for consumers to be spending extra money.
Most of it is going to go to oil-producing countries, and that's not going to be any benefit domestically for our economy.
But it's important to keep things in perspective. That's according to Christopher Knittel. He's an economics professor at the University of California, Davis. He says when you consider the things we don't pay for, what he calls the social costs of gasoline, $3 doesn't sound so bad.
If we worry about climate change, if we worry about even more local pollution, such as smog, if we worry about the fact that our military is larger, the more oil we consume, all of those costs are not in that $3 a gallon. So from that perspective, $3 a gallon is actually a pretty good deal.
Compared to a year and a half ago, when gas in California was over $4.50 a gallon, $3 may not sound so bad. But the uncertainty around where prices are headed next makes it pretty tough for business owners like Scott Blevins at Mountain Valley Express Trucking to plan their budgets for the year. For NPR News, I'm Marianne Russ in Sacramento.
You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News. Americans have been moved by the devastation in Haiti, but in Florida, where essayist Diane Roberts lives, the quake has had a particular effect.
It's impossible to turn away from the images, and just as impossible to bear them. The concrete houses smashed back into dust, the cathedral reduced to rubble, the bodies covered pitifully with sheets and laid in the streets, the raw-eyed survivors sitting amidst the ruins of their nation. For Florida, this is not some distant disaster. More than 350,000 people of Haitian descent live here. Haitian music, Haitian art, and Haitian food are all ingredients in our culture. You hear Creole in Fort Lauderdale and South Beach, even up here in Tallahassee. I have students from Port-au-Prince, Pétionville, and Gonaïves. They've spent the last few days trying to get through to their families, staring all the while at screens full of death. Haiti is 600 miles from Florida, not as close as Cuba, but close enough for thousands to risk the voyage. But while Cuba, that defiant socialist outlier, is a noisy obsession, Haiti occupies a quieter but still profound place in the American psyche. Once it was the richest of France's colonies, awash in sugar and coffee money. But in 1791, the slaves of Haiti took to heart the cry of liberté, égalité, fraternité from their masters over the water and started their own revolution. You'd think the young United States would have welcomed the establishment of a sister republic. We, too, had fought to liberate ourselves from a colonial power. But Haiti was more threat than inspiration, the plantation South's worst nightmare. What if our slaves overthrew the white government and burned the big house down? We didn't officially recognize Haiti's government until 1862, in the middle of our own war over slavery. During the next century and a half, we had a vexed relationship with Haiti, sometimes occupying it, sometimes supporting dictators, sometimes providing money and other aid. Last spring, one of my Haitian students was telling me his country and the Deep South, that includes Florida, have always been intertwined. "Look at Key West," he said, "New Orleans, and now Miami. You're like us, France and Africa in the mix." He's right. We are linked by a history far closer than 600 miles. And now, by sorrow.
Diane Roberts teaches at Florida State University in Tallahassee. This is NPR News.